you read between the lines, he's saying in a couple years, Shane's going to be on ESPN.
Could be 1 week, could be 2 weeks.
Break out the widescreen.
I wondered this entire time why they were investing in those space age looking cameras they have up there. Now I know.
Now you got it.
All right, man. Hey, Josh Pate back in studio. First time with cousin Shane,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, this is a huge studio. Deal. I sat in the parking lot this morning. I'm like, am I ready for this?
So I had to ask you, bigger guest, President Trump or cousin Shane?
Yeah, I'm happy to be Shane's guest. I'm happy to be someone's guest for a change. I'm taking a time out from having guests. That's just, but I will say this. Many people have sat down with various presidents. How many people have sat down with Shane?
Not that many.
When we really think about it, how many people have done it and then be willing to be on camera?
Right. Yeah. So this is an honor for you, I think.
Yes.
It's usually attorneys, probation officers.
I do have to ask, and we're not going to spend a whole day on it, but that one came out of left field. I mean, a president of the United States sitting down with Josh Pate, I'm sure you had, like 10 years ago, if somebody would have told you, you'd say, you're freaking nuts. There's no way that's happening. But how does that happen? Does it just pop up and you're doing it, or was it planned a little bit?
No, it wasn't planned. They reached out probably 2 or 3 weeks before we did it, probably about 2 weeks before we did it. And there's some guys in the White House communications office that I know. Yeah. They watch the show. So we've always, you know, gone back and forth, kind of joked, hey, what if? But then all of a sudden, they were going to have an event down in Rome, Georgia. And the president was looking to do a college football show. So all of a sudden they said, hey, we were in a meeting yesterday. This legitimately came up. Would you be open to it? I said, yeah. You know, certain parameters. I don't want to talk politics. It's very obvious when a president reaches out to a sports-minded podcast.
Right.
There's a mission that's trying to be accomplished there. So you kind of know that. Yeah. You understand it. But at the same time, it's the president of the United States. So at least my opinion was, well, I'm not going to say no to that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and talk about entrance exit strategies on Iran on the show either. Yeah. So I kind of, you know, I want to steer it as best we can. Then you do it and then you come out of it and you have like a million things you would have done different, or I would have done it this way or that way. You don't know, man. You go into it, you do it. There wasn't a whole lot of meat on the bone with it as it turned out. But that day kind of got turned upside down from a scheduling standpoint as well.
Yeah.
But I think in the grand scheme of things, the way I looked at it is, all right, say yes to it. Worst case, it's a disaster. It's not live.
Right.
So if it's really a disaster, just don't air it.
Yeah.
It was much shorter than we thought it was going to be at the outset, but that was because of scheduling, not because they all of a sudden said no. And we aired it, and then you get some pushback. Yeah. Some pushback just purely political. Other pushback, which I kind of understood this part, was, hey, man, you said this show was always going to be non-political. All of a sudden, you had the biggest political face in the world on the show. And I understood that pushback.
Yeah.
My only response was, surely you understand this is like a one-off sort of incident. And then the other thing is, if you didn't like it, okay. Just FYI, it's February. Yeah. So we're going to quickly revert back to college football 100% of the time. But it was an experience. Yeah. As much as sitting down with the president is an experience, seeing the infrastructure and the logistical mechanism around moving the president.
Yeah.
I've always been fascinated by that. So to be able to embed with those guys, like a Secret Service advance team and a day of team and the communications office and the press secretary and his chief of staff, all of those people, it's just like observing how on they have to be every day of their lives.
Yeah.
Whereas you're only quote unquote on to that degree for 4 or 5 hours the day of.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild to see.
Yeah. We had right now up in Sevier County, back home where I'm at, Secretary of War is in town. Of course, you see all this military press. I mean, we just think, did something bad happen? You know, because small town, they're like, no, this is what has to happen when that shows up. Was there any vetting? Did you have people come to your house or ask your family members about you? Or,
These are the important questions.
And you say
you skipped town today as the Secretary of War.
Okay,
yeah, there was a lot of vetting, but that's done well in advance.
Yeah.
So, like, here's what's crazy. Okay, so you think about how often you see a president, whoever it is, at the given time. You think of how often you see them away from the White House. So they're somewhere. They could be in Seattle. They could be in Miami. And then to have participated in one of those. So I know what went into it. So we're dealing with a Secret Service advance team a week out. They're already on the ground a week out. They're talking to me about logistics. They're talking to me about location. They're asking everything from equipment to audio, video, lighting to how many people are you going to have there? Okay, we need you to shave it down here because here's the exact footprint of the building. Here's the layout. Here's where we'll have people. This is done a week out.
Yeah.
And then they vet you and they take your blood sample and they check your contact lens strength and all that stuff happens. And so then by the time you get there, you're kind of just confirming, oh, hey, you're the guy I've exchanged 50 texts with. Oh, hey, you're the guy that I've been on the phone with. Oh, hey, you're the girl that's been emailing me constantly. And it's more just checking you in of and getting you in one perimeter, two perimeters, then a third perimeter. Yeah. And by the time you get in there, you feel like nothing can touch you.
I gotcha.
You feel really, really safe once you get in there.
Well, I thought that, but then I saw Rusty Manziel sitting in the back. I was like, how did he get in?
It felt much more like
I'm going to have to double check that vetting process.
Felt much more like a movie scene in that sense. It felt much more like I've been watching Paradise.
Yeah.
Which is a great show. And there's a, not to spoiler alert it or anything, but there's a scene in there where there's an incident with a president and someone who's not supposed to be close to him, you're kind of watching it saying, man, that wouldn't happen in real life. Like, no one of questionable character would be getting that close to a president. It's like a post-Ronald Reagan world. Right. We're not letting that happen again. And then there's Rusty Manziel, 20 Rusty. Feet from Trump. So we still got some wrinkles to iron out.
Yeah, we're still
working
it out.
How long ago was it, ballpark, when you first started, hey, I'm going to go live on Facebook and talk college football?
About... the idea,
yeah.
I'm looking at my phone because I'm trying to make sure it's 2026. Probably about 10 years ago, maybe a little over, give or take a year, is when I first saw a Facebook live stream.
Yeah.
So I was sitting in a weather center with my chief meteorologist at the time because I was doing local news. It was like probably 6:35 or 6:40 in the evening. We had just gotten off the 6 p.m. newscast. He and I are just hanging out in the weather center. And he and I are talking like you and I are talking right now. His monitor's behind him. So I'm kind of like seeing his Facebook feeds pulled up. And I saw Casey Smith, actually. I saw Casey Smith, who was working for TxAgs at the time, doing a Facebook live stream. And I said, I know who Casey Smith is, but how is she live? And he looks over his shoulder and he's like, oh, that's Facebook Live. They do live on Facebook now. And that was just, I didn't know that was possible. And then shortly thereafter, YouTube Live came along. And I remember I was like a year out of my contract being up at the time in local TV. And so that day, like I go home that night, I find out everything I can about Facebook Live, about in the future YouTube Live. And like if that was going to be a real thing, that's what I wanted to do. Because that was like, I've told you before, that felt like a Berlin Wall moment for me, just in terms of potential access that I could now have. But also it was different kinds of walls falling down because up until that point, you used to just think in terms of media markets. You just thought DMA, which is acronym for media market somehow. And so you would think if I'm in Columbus, Georgia, and I do a show in Columbus, best case scenario, it's going to air on one of the local affiliates here. And we should talk Auburn and we should talk Georgia, maybe some Georgia Tech, Alabama. But that's about the extent of it. Why would we talk Oregon here? We're just in this media market. But then if you could stream on Facebook or you could stream on YouTube, what stops you from doing national content? So that was where my mind went immediately. But since I was still a year left on my deal, you can't just be going and producing your own independent content that overlaps with the content that those people are paying you to do. That's a breach of contract. So I had to bite the bullet for a year, which felt like 10 years at the time.
Right.
Because you're so worried that there's such an advantage in being first to market. And if you got to wait a year and this new technology is here, imagine if you couldn't touch AI for another 5 years. Mm-hmm. In any kind of competitive landscape, you feel like you're just voluntarily handcuffing yourself. Thankfully, it wasn't such that a million different entities had flooded the market by the time I could finally do it. But I think we hit go on it maybe late 2017, early 2018. And then the Burrow season happened the next year. And man, I got to forever be grateful for LSU 2019 and the fact that I was kind of a little ahead of the curve on them. So all the LSU folks started watching the show. That got us on people's radars. That got us on Shannon Terry's radar, for example. And so he calls me late in 2019, who he was running 24/7 at the time here in Nashville. And he said, do you want to come up here and do what you're doing for us? And that was a pretty quick yes. The only minor hangup I had, it didn't last long. The only minor hangup I had is I didn't know anything about this landscape and I didn't know anything about the future of it because everything was changing.
Yeah.
My one fear was, it wasn't a big fear. My one hangup was, what if I'm on the precipice of just completely blowing up this huge independently created empire of college football content creation, and I'm about to give that up to go work for 24/7 CBS. In turn, it was so misguided. Like, that thinking was so misguided, and I did not fall victim to it, thankfully. Because as soon as I went to work for Shannon, you realize, well, you're just going to have near complete creative control to do what you want to do here because you're working for the right guy. You could have gone and worked for the wrong kind of person, and they may have boxed you in. Shannon Terry was the antithesis of that because he himself has lived that kind of life as a creator of companies in general. So I sat down with him the first day, and he reiterated, no, you got this job because we noticed you doing certain things certain ways. We don't have any of that here, so go do your thing. Then COVID set in. Then everyone went home for 8 or 9 months, but we got emergency clearance to the studio, so we just kept doing our stuff. It scaled an audience fairly quickly. By the time everyone comes back, especially at the corporate level, at the CBS level, they looked at it and said, well, that's making money. We're not going to touch that. We're not going to mess with that. And then we were off to the races, and eventually you buy your rights and you buy your IP, you buy your assets back, and then you own it again. So I guess it's the best of both worlds there.
Well, I ask that because, so again, roughly 10 years ago to friggin' President of the United States on, and basically any coach you could get. So you've dominated this venture that we're all trying to do what just well in, but where do you think this will be in 10 more years? Do you have any idea? I mean, you mentioned AI. I mean, obviously that's going to be a huge part of it, but where do you think this is in all this media in 10 years?
Media in general, I think there's a little bit of a wave bouncing around the pool type effect. Like, I don't view it as this tidal wave that just continues to churn in one direction, which is the way a lot of people characterize our space. They say, well, it used to be that there were three channels you watched, then cable exploded, and for a long time it was just legacy, or in radio it was terrestrial radio. That had its heyday. Then podcasting and digital media come along. Streaming come along. So then everything leaves over there, and then it comes over here. All right, so then zoom it into us. We just talk college football year-round, and we look at the landscape, and to have your dream job in our lane 15 years ago, you're working at ESPN. Mm-hmm. To have your dream job these days, because I consider myself having my dream job, you're owning it yourself, but you're still in business with ESPN. But you're just doing independent, like, talent deals with ESPN. But I think the flawed thinking would be, well, okay, the juice is just going to continue to forever move in this direction and not acknowledge that the ESPNs of the world aren't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. They aren't going anywhere. They've long since been built, and they are a mainframe existence in the space. And what they'll do is they'll either see things for a fad or a temporary, you know, exception to a rule, or they'll get with the new rule. And they've gotten with the new rule. So now you turn on, I mean, I thought it was pretty surreal last year that if you turned on Get Up on Thursday mornings, you saw me and Luan and Compton sitting up there in New York City. And then you fly home and do your show Thursday night in Nashville. But the whole way that happens is because a Burke Magnus or a Jimmy Pitaro or a Mike Foss gets on the phone with you and says, here's what we're thinking. Here's where our head's at. Where's your head at? You know, is there a way we can work together? And then you think, okay, well, that's happened for me. We're not the only ones that's going to happen for. The three of us have been blessed to be able to do it, but that's been successful. So they're going to try and duplicate more of what's been successful. So, like, to me, if I were to try and think 3, 5, 10 years ahead, it's such a great time to be doing what the three of us are doing. Because you don't have to really sacrifice anything to get everything. Now, that's a sweet spot. Maybe that doesn't last forever. But right now, you're just doing your show. Wherever you want to live, you can do it. You just build your studio. The internet is your distribution. And you scale it and hopefully do a good job to where enough people watch it and they validate you through their viewership to where your CBSs or your ESPNs or who knows, your Amazons or Netflixes may want to get in that space. There are a ton of podcasts just living on the Netflix homepage right now.
Yeah.
Bill Simmons has his entire catalog virtually on the Netflix homepage. We'll build it and necessarily have to move anywhere, change anything about what he did. He did exactly what he does. And Netflix said, well, that's working. So instead of us trying to build it over here, let's just go license it. Let's bring some of what works inside our tent. That's where I would probably say it's going. And you think about this too. If you're running ESPN right now, 15 or 20 years ago, you had to basically use your platform to do research. You had to do the development to a certain extent on your platform. By that, I mean, you hire someone, especially in the commentary space or the opinion making space, you hire someone and bring them on your air and then you find out how they'll do. These days, it's almost like they're the NFL and podcasting and YouTube is college football. Like the NFL doesn't have to have a minor league because it has college football. So it's already seen the players play. It already understands Fernando Mendoza can play at a certain level. So if we're the Raiders, it's not foolproof, but we understand what we're getting when we draft him. Well, likewise with them. They do a deal with Pat McAfee. There's no guesswork as to whether that's going to pan out. The only guesswork was, do the people in managerial positions have the stomach to withstand the criticism and pushback that is really just jealousy and maybe a resistance to change masked as criticism. If they can stomach that, and to their credit, they have. They've stood 10 toes down behind him. Pat McAfee was always going to kill it on ESPN because they understand if you make it in podcasting, if you make it in YouTube, if you make it where there's no built-in advantage in that world where we know it because we live in it, you got to earn 100% of your viewership. You're not playing in an airport bar. You know, you're not playing on the TV in the rental car center where people are pretty much imprisoned there and they're force-fed watching you whether they want to or not. If people don't like you or Shane or me, they just don't watch. So if we've scaled an audience in that environment, certainly an ESPN understands, well, that's a slam dunk if we put them on our air. That's the direction I think it'll go.
If you read between the lines, he's saying in a couple of years, Shane's going to be on ESPN.
Could be 1 week, could be 2 weeks.
Break out the widescreen.
I wondered this entire time why they were investing in those space age looking cameras they have up there. Now I know.
Now you got it. Well, I always one of the things that I love most about your show is you cover it all. You know, and I mean, you'll be covering some teams that I have to Google where it's at, you know, and how do you consume all that? Because it's tough enough just doing SEC, covering 16, trying to watch all these games, you know, what is the process on game? Because I can imagine you're not sleeping any Saturday and Sunday trying to get all this stuff in. What is the prep work that needs to be done going into the next week?
So on a game day, I'll be at a game. So you hope you trust your eyes to have watched that game. Mm-hmm. Maybe if it's a night game, you were able to watch the noon games, but your 3:30s and your prime times that run in front of or congruent to the game you're at, yeah, you might as well be on the moon.
Yeah.
You're not really seeing those. Now, what we can have is like we've got access to technology that can give me a condensed game pretty quick after it's done. But also you got to trust your staff. And what I do is, I don't tell, like, Jesse, for example, my producer. I wouldn't tell Jesse, watch Ole Miss LSU, tell me what you think.
Yeah.
I got to know what I value in a game, and I got to build a rubric. Here are the 5 to 10 buckets of opinion or of feedback or of content that I want to get out of any game. And I want you to watch that game through that prism, and I want you to fill those buckets for me so that you can really almost hand me a report on a game. Yeah. Then I'm going to watch the condensed game. At some point throughout the day, Sunday, I'm going to have watched every game we're going to talk about. I'm not going on air talking about a game I didn't see.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to watch 3.5 hours of broadcast feed.
Yeah.
So there's going to be flavor I miss. Here's a perfect example. So if you watch Tennessee, Georgia, mm-hmm. and I only get to see the condensed game. All right, let's just say, for example, there was a 5-minute period where Kirk Herbstreit got kind of critical of Joey Aguilar. And that ended up being a big takeaway. Tennessee fans looked at it, and this is hypothetical, obviously, but right. Tennessee fans looked at it and they're storming the message boards afterwards because they win by 3, and they're saying, man, if you would have listened to Herbstreit talk about Joey, you would have thought we got smoked. Yeah. Anti-SEC bias. Well, I'm not going to pick up on that in a condensed game. And therefore, if I just go talk about it the next night and the Tennessee fans watching me, they will realize this dude had no idea what the real biggest takeaway from the game was.
Right.
Like, we didn't care that we beat Kentucky by 3, even though we were favored by 16. We cared that we thought we were done wrong from the broadcast perspective.
I gotcha.
So you gotta have eyes you trust on the broadcast.
Or a missed call or
yes,
something like
yes.
that. Yeah.
You gotta have eyes on that. And then also you gotta have eyes, speaking of missed calls, you gotta have eyes on the post game. Mm-hmm. If I were to watch the Georgia Auburn game from last year, just condensed, I would have not been able to know the amount of backlash
yeah.
that came off of that goal line play. I would have watched it. I would have said, ooh, that looks questionable either way. But boom, 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 you're on to the next play.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have known to spend a majority of my time talking about that the next yeah. night. So you got to have a team you trust. You got to have some pretty good technology on your side.
Cole's told me some horror stories of just things they've said on the air and just the blowback they're getting from literally every SEC fan base, you know?
I heard he has to wear those glasses and fake mustache because it cost him to even go to Oxford, Mississippi. Did you hear that? And then he bought one of the squirrels because you can buy a squirrel on Ole Miss's campus and you can name it.
Really?
And he bought a squirrel. He contributed positively to the economy of Oxford and they still come after him.
What are we talking about? Squirrels?
You got to ask him, not me. Okay. out of the two of us, he's the one who's adopted a squirrel. So he's familiar with the practice of adopting rodents. Squirrels yeah. are rodent. Yeah.
Yeah.
He adopted one.
Yeah.
And they still said, nope, we know what you're trying to do. You can't buy us. You can buy us football players, but you can't buy our love. You can't buy our affection.
Is there a game or two? I know you like to plan and of course that's going to change 4 or 5 weeks into a season, but is there like one or two games that, as I'll say SEC, cause we don't care about the other conferences, that you're looking at saying, hey, I'd really like to be at this one.
Well, definitely LSU Ole Miss.
Yeah, there
definitely is. That one. That's also fun because for two reasons that come to my mind. Ole Miss doesn't host a lot of those can't miss games.
Yeah.
Because they're not in the same kind of conversation annually as Georgia, mm-hmm. per se. So you're all like Georgia goes to Alabama this year. Obviously, that's a huge one. And I'm not shying away from that. Like I would circle that one. But I love when an Ole Miss gets in the mix, and specifically if it's a home game for Ole Miss. Because yeah. I always think back to that game where Bo Wallace took down Alabama, and I think about how goalposts come down. They carry it out of the stadium. But I remember in the aftermath of the game thinking, hey, this doesn't happen very often, but right now in this very moment, the entire world's focused on Oxford, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And that's kind of refreshing and a change from, oh, the world's focused on Tuscaloosa or the world's focused on Athens. Because it's not that that's wrong, but it's just frequent.
Yeah.
And so I just think about that. And then the other part of that is, all right, so Pete Golding did what he did in the playoff last year. But I have this kind of working theory that it's back to square one publicly in terms of the opinion of Pete Golding. Because I think a lot of people will hit reset in their mind and they'll think something along the lines of, yeah, this guy was the head coach during a run in the playoffs last year, but he's not the one who got them to the doorstep. Like Lane got him to the doorstep. So let's see this guy, instead of taking the stick when the plane's already in midair and just making sure it stayed at cruising altitude, let's see him pull it away from the gate, take it out on the tarmac, get it on the runway, take off, and then get it up to cruising altitude, because that's this whole different ball game. And if they were, let's just say, for example, to lose by 17 to LSU at home.
Yeah.
I think there'd immediately be a whole lot of questioning around Pete, whether it's fair or not. I think that's the way it would go. And conversely, if Pete were to beat them, he could do no wrong.
Yeah.
For a long time, he could do no wrong there.
Hey, speaking of Lane quitting, I call him on this show because he quit on his damn team.
Oh, you renamed him.
Oh yeah. On Feinbaum's show. But I know you're close now with a lot of these.
I don't even know what legal loopholes you got to hop through to do that. But okay,
I know you're you know close with coaches. You interview these coaches. I would imagine you converse with them. You don't have to mention any names, although that would be great if you did. What is the opinion of Lane Kiffin among the coaching circles? I mean, are there a lot of people that are pretty pissed off at what he did?
No, not that I've talked to. The ones I talked to said they would have done the same thing. Now you got to come up with nicknames for everybody.
Oh, no, we do.
Yeah, I know.
Cheat Golding.
But not Hugh. Not Hugh, because Hugh's not around anymore. So we don't even need a nickname for Hugh.
No, his ass fired. Old Pastor Hugh there.
Moment of silence for me there.
Yeah.
No, they all kind of said, it was interesting because they said, if I were Ole Miss, I would never let him stick around.
Yeah.
But then they said, if I were Lane, I would leave. And so I thought that was kind of hypocritical, but they said, no. I've just put myself in different shoes. Like, if I were the AD there, I would do it this way. If I were the head coach there, I would do it this way. But then they all circled back around, and this is not unfair. They would all circle back around to, you know, the whole point is this calendar stupid that it even creates this kind of argument. And I happen to agree with them on that. Like, I think it's dumb that anyone's even put in that position, AD or head coach, in December. Then you make that point on air. And I don't know if you've dealt with this, and thank your lucky stars if you haven't, but there's this group of people that wander the internet. And anytime you make a point, no matter how logical it is, that happens to defend a coach or happens to defend a coach's point of view, they just accuse you of carrying water for the coaches. So for me in December, that looked like this. One camp was screaming, shame on Lane Kiffin. There was another camp screaming, shame on Ole Miss. You should be in it for the players. You should let him coach as long as he wants to. And then there was a third camp, much smaller camp. And I was in the third camp. And the third camp was, but Lane didn't make the mess. And the Ole Miss athletic director didn't make the mess. The mess is that we have signing day and transfer portal overlapping with the end of the regular season. And the whole reason these people are firing coaches as early as they are is to get new coaches in the door so they can salvage a class. That's the stupid part. That's the messed up part. And I said that. And truthfully, this kind of blindsided me because I thought everyone would just agree with that. It's not even an opinion. That's just kind of fact. Like, that shouldn't be that way. And I had a bunch of people come at me saying, oh, of course you're doing the bidding of the coaches. I'm doing the bidding of me. I'm the one who feels that way. Mm-hmm. I don't need a coach to tell me to feel that way. I'm the one who feels that way. I still feel that way. As far as I can tell, we hadn't really changed the calendar since then. So I still feel that way. Who's to say it doesn't happen again this year? What's stopping a round of coaches from being fired before Halloween this year? And then having coaching searches that completely derail November and the playoffs again this year? I want to think that was a unique circumstance. But you know as well as I do, if you're a big-time program and you fire a coach, by the very default of what you did, firing a coach, you have to go upgrade from who you had. Well, naturally, you're going to look at the pool of coaches that are capable of taking you to the playoff. Well, it just so happens most of the coaches capable of taking you to the playoff are probably in the playoff race. So I don't know how you don't disrupt that unless you fix the calendar. I understand we're sitting in a studio right now. It's easy to say fix it. It's a lot harder to do it. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try and do it.
But I would counter that to say, if you were to poll just, it doesn't matter to coaches or fans, probably fans more important. You know, if there's a coach that's going to abandon his team on the eve of the playoff, I guarantee you, before this happened, Lane Kiffin still would have got more votes than anybody.
Oh, you mean like if you put a question mark over the face in August,
right,
and you were to prophesy, this is going to happen, tell me which coach is going to do it.
He's lost the benefit of the doubt long ago when he left Tennessee.
Well, you know what we should do, and that's too late to do it with Kiffin. But you know what you should do is, we're in March right now, so you got a few months. By August, you should do that focus grouping. And you should say, let's just say, for example, I have it on good authority, that's going to happen this upcoming year. And a coach is going to bail on his playoff caliber team to go to another team before the playoffs. Who's it going to be? By the way, who would the answer be right now?
The same guy.
The same guy. Lane Kiffin.
Oh, Lane's going to leave LSU?
Yeah, he's going to NFL. Or...
Did DeBoer get fired, or did DeBoer himself leave to go somewhere else? Wow. I see how this is really fun and really toxic all of a sudden. Boy, that game can get you in trouble. It will generate attention, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you would have said Lane. I agree with you. Most people would have said Lane. They may have even guessed that it was going to be Florida that he was going to. Like, they may not have guessed that LSU was going to come open, especially because LSU won in week one. So then you think, top 10 team, they won on the road at Clemson in week one against a top 10 team at the time. So they're on their way, and then it still craters into the ground. I want to know where Brian Kelly's going to end up, because, you know, BK's trying to get back into coaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's knocking on the door of all the shows out there. Hey, I'll come on the show if you want me to. He's got no shortage of money, so therefore he can sit it out as long as he wants to. But I wonder if he's got an entry point again in the sport.
It won't be in the SEC.
I don't think so.
Safe to say. Yeah. Pretty safe to say.
Are you looking at any teams to pop up? Maybe one that's nobody's talking about. This year's Indiana, if you will.
Does it got to be SEC, or can we go anywhere?
I hate other conferences.
That's understandable.
Yeah, we'll go one out. Can we go one out, one in?
That's fine.
Okay.
All right, so one in, I think, would have to be Kentucky. Not quite like last year's Indiana. Right. I mean, I'm not quite sure Will Stein's going to be doing playoff press conferences or anything like that. But then again, well, I don't know. Signetti had done it the year before, so it wasn't like out of left field. But I would say Kentucky, you know, with getting Minshew down there at quarterback, if it really was true that he was just neck and neck with C.J. Carr in that quarterback battle at Notre Dame a year ago at this time, then maybe he really is that good. I know Nebraska really coveted him. They thought they had him. And then Will Stein just swooped in from the rafters and got him. I don't know. Maybe they pop off. Maybe Will Stein is an injection of exactly what they needed there. Outside of that, Florida, I guess. Or maybe Auburn. Yeah. Maybe Auburn was held down so much that if Alex Golish is really the right guy and he brought his quarterback with him, maybe they're the one. I don't know that. I think the beauty of you being the next Indiana is no one's going to quite be able to see that coming.
Yeah.
And if we can see it coming, then you're probably not the next Indiana.
Yeah.
But then if we were to, give me 30 seconds on this, we'll time me, outside of the SEC, but a program that was once rumored to be headed to the SEC as part of conference expansion, so by default we include them, Virginia Tech, when Franklin went there, Franklin brought some players, some staffers with him. He retained a vast chunk of their roster. They're going to have one of the most experienced rosters in the ACC this year. It is the ACC still, after all. So I could see them jumping up and randomly getting 9 wins, outside shot at 10 wins. They're knocking on the door of the playoff.
Yeah.
Now, it's with a caveat next to it, because, you know, that may be like Virginia last year.
Yeah.
Virginia's in the race because they're in the ACC, and you got luck of the draw with the schedulers. But outside of that, I don't know. I'd have to search far and wide. Houston, maybe, in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Just kind of randomly out of nowhere. Oklahoma State, I think, could come out of nowhere, too, because the guy came up there from North Texas, brought like 30-something players from the portal. He had double digits from his own roster. That tailback and that quarterback are really good. Mm-hmm. And the Big 12 is kind of wide open, too, outside of Texas Tech. Beneath them, it's wide open. So I guess those three. Did I name three? I actually named like 5. So pick 3 of those 5. That's where I'm going.
Hey, since the last time you've been in here, you've gotten married. Congrats.
I thank you. Yes, I did.
I saw Billy Lucci and Cole in the videos. I didn't see Shane.
No. There was food there.
Well, it's more something about an incident in Biloxi in 2012. Yeah.
But I've just wondered, how has that changed anything that you do? Because I know she's got a background, right, in college football. So yeah. I could imagine that is even up your game.
Yeah, you know how you talk to some people sometimes and they've just been married and you ask them how it's going and they just say, oh, it's great, man. I can't complain about anything. You know they're lying.
Yeah.
Because you know some things have changed. Probably in the net, it's been an upgrade for them in life, but they've really had to trade some.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, stuff has changed for me, but if you look at where Savannah lived, the world she lived in, she worked at Southern Miss and then LSU under Les. She worked at Ole Miss under Freeze. She worked for a while for Saban at Alabama. So she's lived in that world. She is used to, in other words, thinking in her mind, a fall wedding's a non-starter. She is used to blocking off large chunks of her calendar year and understanding this is a no-go zone. We're not even going to think about planning anything. She understands that Saturdays, and to an extent weekdays during the college football season, are all going to be 14-plus hour days, and it's just going to be really tireless, and then you're hopefully trying to get to February. You got a little downtime in February, and then March, when some people I don't know why people do this, but they actually start caring about basketball. So you get some time in March, you get some time in April, but she's used to that calendar. Also, she knows most everyone in the industry, in the football side of the industry. So she comes with me most of the places I go because they know her. So they'll credential her, or like if we're going two places next week where she has people she's worked with in both of those buildings. So she'll go in there, we'll walk in. I won't see her until we leave. She'll be off like doing her own thing, talking to her people. So I think what I'm trying to say is, if I were to design like the perfect wife, she's it.
Nailed it.
She's it, especially
to
be doing what we're doing. She's it.
Damn, too bad we didn't ask that before Valentine, so yeah. That would have been a nice...
I hope my wife ain't watching.
It has been fun, though. It has been fun. Now, if you get her on the show and you ask her what her experience has been, I can't guarantee it would sound the same, but that's my experience. I know my truth.
Now, we'd love to have her. What's she doing?
I know the off season for you, especially. I always think of weather. Every time I get a thunderstorm alert or something,
I'm like, ask it, Shane.
Yeah.
Ask it.
What are we doing? What are we doing this off season? Where are we going this year? Are we doing some storm chasing?
Yes.
Yeah.
We will be doing some storm chasing. Now, I will say this. I feel like we're recording on Saturday. I have no clue when this is going to air, but we are sitting here physically on a Saturday. Think it could get a little rough tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So let's be heads up on that. Snow maybe the next morning.
Yeah.
It is March after all. Yeah, we're going to be storm chasing. I was talking to my dad about this like 3 weeks ago. We were down there for a little while. And you remember like a second ago, we were talking about how you could have your dream job. Like, how does that look? All right. So if you go a step further, what is dream job, but like dream existence maybe? Back in, I don't know, 2010 or something like that, he asked me, what would your perfect setup look like? We're just randomly sitting there watching a Braves game or something. He goes, all right, what would your perfect setup look like? I didn't even have a job at the time, I don't think. And I said, well, I would love to be able to cover college football for a living. Because if I could cover college football for a living, that would mean I'm wall-to-wall busy in the fall and the early winter. But then I'm pretty free in the spring when I could go storm chasing. And so then storm chasing would be my part B. So that's exactly where we are now, is the point. So you can cover college football, you can do storm chasing in the spring, but it used to be when I grew up in Columbus, in Columbus, Georgia, I had no money, so I could only storm chase maybe like a 2-hour radius around Columbus. And you got to wait for the storms to come to you.
Yeah.
So now you can just go to Wichita, you go to Tulsa, you go to Oklahoma City, you go to Denton, Texas, if you need to be there, and you can kind of chase back to Nashville, because most of the systems move west to east anyway. So you fly out there, you get your rental car, get the hail protection.
Yeah.
Get the damage protection. And you just kind of drift. You take 2 days, 3 days if you need to. And you just kind of end up back in Nashville.
Like a river cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever you get here is whenever you get here.
But for deadly tornadoes.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll be
How many did you see last year?
Only saw two last year.
Two.
Yeah. So it was a down year for me. I'm at 13 in my career. And I'm looking to get to the big two.
Biggest one you've seen?
EF4 in Beauregard, Alabama, March 3rd of 2019. That was a tough one.
I'd like to see a 1, you know, or like a 0.5.
You will see the little guy.
Just to say I've seen one.
Yeah, you want
to
see an FCS tornado.
Yeah, but I could. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. But my luck, it's like Twister, you know, and it just creates the perfect storm or something. But yeah, if you're a novice at this, obviously you wouldn't recommend me and Mike just driving out there looking for tornadoes, but is there like something we could do to maybe get close enough to one, but not too close?
I don't want to chase it.
Yeah.
I just want to feel it.
Yeah.
I don't want to eat it. I just want to put it in my mouth for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's not.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No. What for real though, what they do out there is there are a lot of outfits that just do full on storm chasing tours.
Yeah.
Like if you're into that sort of thing and you're the kind of person, believe it or not, this kind of person exists. I don't want to take my vacation money and go to the beach. I want to save up my vacation money and I'm going to go to the Midwest. I'm going to go to the plains for a week in May.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sit in a big van with 4 or 5 of my buddies and we're just going to go on a storm chasing tour and we'll let professionals be the drivers and the forecasters and we'll just enjoy it. You could do that or you could ride along with someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
But the thing that sucks, this is the only downside. There's something called convergence that we run into a lot out there. And that is this phenomenon where storm chasing's gotten really popular.
Yeah.
So especially if you got a big breakout day in Oklahoma that's been forecast for several days in advance, you'll be in like Moore or Lawton or El Reno or out in Enid, and there'll just be a line a mile long of cars, which is not a problem if you're on the interstate, because that's the way an interstate is anyway. But a lot of times you're on back roads doing this stuff, and you have to pivot pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine on these two-lane, in some cases, dirt roads, if you're going and going and going, then you need to Y it, and you need to turn around real quick. You could do that if you're alone. Yeah. Even if five cars were around you, you could do that. But you get in a situation where you got 45 or 50 cars trying to do that in a very condensed amount of time. And it has not happened yet, but it's probably an inevitability that something bad is going to happen because of chaser convergence. And that's just born from a lot of people deciding, I'm going to go do this for the first time.
Yeah.
I've seen it in the movies. I'm going to go do it. And that's why you always kind of run the risk when you talk about it publicly. Yeah, I love talking about it because I'm passionate about it. But every time you talk about it, you put an idea in 20 people's heads, and then they end up following through on it.
Needs to be like Fight Club, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The first rule of storm chase.
Still talking about storm chase.
Dude, he said every time he says Twisters. Remember Media Days a couple years ago in Dallas?
Oh, yeah.
So the new Twister movie came out, and there was like some producer of the ESPN had, or the SEC had done some documentary, and they had rented out a theater, and like one of the guys part of it, you know, came over and he was handing out pamphlets. Hey, you guys coming to the movie? You know, free movie. All the media is invited. And they handed it to Shane. He looked at it and he's like, maybe if it was Twisters. And he came back to him. I was like, this probably can't get credentialed for anything, Shane.
That's one of many reasons when people look at us, they ask, y'all twins? Yeah. One of many reasons.
I'm going to get a shirt that says, not Josh Payne.
You remember, I forgot about this. They had these big posters. They had big, it was like the digital marquees on the buildings downtown in Dallas.
Yeah.
And they were advertising. And we had set up a live shot. I didn't realize this, but if you looked behind me in the live shot, one of those towers had the Twisters poster, but it was digital on it. And that was one of the highlights of my career. I'm not shy enough to admit that. That was great.
Hey, do you think the SEC's all got a coaching problem in terms of, you know, it was at a high level not that long ago. And I'm not saying there's bad coaching necessarily, but I think the SEC really needs Summerall, Golish, even Stein or Silverfield. We need these guys to hit because I think right now, I think it's fair to say the SEC the last couple seasons has been a little bit of a coaching disadvantage.
I agree. I think it's self-inflicted to a certain extent. I don't necessarily even think it's the head coaching level. I think the hiring practices in the SEC have been lazy for quite a while. This is where the Big Ten has seriously won up the SEC. And that is, it is almost a pure meritocracy when it comes to hiring practices in the Big Ten, as opposed to how incestuous it is in the SEC. Now, I've said this many, many times. I probably have even said this to you before, but I'll say it again because it's still happening today. The most disappointing facet of kind of seeing behind the curtain, understanding how the sausage gets made in college football, is understanding how lazy hiring is in the SEC. By that, I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I thought any head coach at an SEC program is like a mad scientist, and he knows everything about everything, and when it comes to hiring a coordinator or filling out his defensive staff, man, I can't imagine how thorough and intricate the process is. And then you come to find out all it is who represents you from an agency perspective. All right, they got you the job, or so you're led to believe. You call them up, you say, give me your roster of clients. I need a defensive line coach. And then really more so, they recommend three or four names and you pick from those three or four names. That, I'm not saying doesn't exist in the Big Ten, but it does not exist nearly to the extent it does in the SEC. And as a result, you end up with guys, and then you go click on their Wikipedia page, and you see this 15-year career, and all they've done is ping pong ball around the SEC. And there's a reason they didn't take a stop at Michigan or take a stop at Ohio State. It's because that's not how they hire up there. And so it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy. Because once that's the way it's done, then everyone else does it that way. Mm-hmm. And you look at the roster of head coaches, and vast majority of them are repped by one or two of the same outfits. And it's just like this endless conga line of rinse and repeat, or some would call that retread. And there's certainly no motivation for those who represent those coaches to cease that practice because it's the lifeblood of your very existence. But in the aggregate, it'd be one thing if you just existed in the SEC and the SEC was a standalone bubble because you'd never get exposed. But then you go play Indiana and you get exposed. You go play a Michigan or you go play an Ohio State and you're going to get exposed because the guys across the field from you, they may not even in any one-off situation have shot-for-shot talent that's equal to you, but they're going to outcoach you. More times than not, they're going to outcoach you because the guys who were on those staffs are on them just for the right reasons. And I can't always say the same thing about SEC rosters.
Well, and that's fascinating because I know you were talking head coaches, but coordinators too, I would imagine, similar. Would you agree two biggest potential risks in the offseason in the SEC, Will Muschamp getting hired as defense coordinator at Texas, and then Holloman Wiggins, A&M, getting promoted? I'm not saying either one's going to be a bad hire, but I think Muschamp, I don't think he's a bad coach, but I think he's, because everybody knows the name, he's been in this conference forever, he's viewed as like elite of elite defensive coordinators, even though his track record does not necessarily back it up. Meanwhile, A&M, you just had a, for A&M standard, historically good offense. You just made the playoff. Elko looks like he may finally deliver a championship to A&M, but if this is like a disaster hire, it could derail all the momentum. Are those two risky hires, you think?
Yeah, I'd circle them as risks. Here's where it gets hard. So you and I both understand if Shane taps out for a second and Steve Sarkisian's sitting there, or if Shane taps out for a second and Mike Elko's sitting there, like we both understand those guys have forgotten more than we know about their organization or about the sport in general, about evaluating talent, about promoting from within and all that stuff. So it's not that we're sitting here thinking we're going to outball him or we're going to outdo him or put him in this intellectual corner and dunk on him when it comes to understanding his program, either one of them. But I had someone tell me one time, I am not a doctor, but I know an ugly baby when I see one. So you don't always have to have expertise in a field to make a pretty informed opinion about something related to that field. So the something related to this field is, take Muschamp at Texas, for example. Do I really believe that a full-on national defensive coordinator search was conducted for Texas? No. Far more likely, the case is that Sark already knew, if I'm going to move on from Kwiatkowski, I'm going to do it because I know I've got this guy circled, and if I know I can get him, by Pete. I think that's probably what happened, and he understood I can get Will Muschamp. Will's been around the SEC. Will knows how to coach ball. I still think he's got tread left on his tires. I'll bring him in. Now, look, that may work out. Is that the way I'd go about hiring? No. Personally, that's not the way I hire my own staff. So I think that's how I'd run a football program. With Elko, it's a little bit different because Elko already had Holloman in his building. So that's where I really, man, I sit there all the time and I talk about Mike Elko and I say, boy, two things I really trust about him is evaluation and development. Now, I'm talking about players when I say that, but I could just as easily be talking about coaches. So I think it would surprise me more, although I agree with you that it's a risk, it would surprise me more if Holloman Wiggins didn't work out only because Mike has watched him every day. He's observed him every day. And so if that guy doesn't work out, I'm not saying I'd be shocked. I'm saying I would be more surprised than if Muschamp didn't work out.
The last thing I got to ask because it's brought up all the time. If I give you the keys to the commissioner spot, what would college football look like 3 years from now?
I would love to do what the push is right now, which is pooling the media rights. And I would also take, well, I'm the commissioner. I'm not in a position to be able to do this. Here's what I'll say. I would work as hard as I possibly could to take the push to pull the media rights, which is overhauling the Sports Broadcasting Act. And I would take the push to get the SCORE Act across the finish line in Congress. I would just merge those two bills. Mm-hmm. And I think I would get enough bipartisan support to where I could get a bill passed. Now, a lot of people tell you that can't happen. I think they're wrong. I got pretty good reason to think that. So I would think that I could get that done. At that point, still, you can't force the SEC or the Big Ten to just voluntarily want to renegotiate their deals as a collective. Mm-hmm. What I would hope is I could convince, whether it be Greg Sankey or his university presidents, whether it be Tony Petitti or his university presidents, that there really is more money in it for everyone, including you guys, in this new world. there really is a way to fund non-revenue generating sports. There really is a way for this to flow down to the second and third tier of the sport and its athletes. There is a way to collectively bargain this or have some kind of collective bargaining mechanism and everybody wins. That would be my push. It'd be very hard because all kinds of different interests are represented. There really aren't people right now looking out for the overall greater interest of college football. Mm-hmm. I don't even blame someone like Greg Sankey for putting the SEC above the rest of the sport because that's his job.
Yeah.
And I don't blame any of these commissioners for feeling that way. But I do wish at some point if you were asking for protection from the federal government, if you were asking to be treated as special, I would love for you to look a little bit beyond just your own mirror. And I would love for maybe Congress to come along and say, like, guys, if you need the protection, we're going to give it to you, but here's what you're going to give us. And at that point, it's not a handshake agreement anymore. At that point, you remember back in the day, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 had an alliance and yeah. It lasted for 10 minutes. Well, that's because nothing's really official. But when you have things signed into law and agreed upon, those are official. There are consequences when you break that stuff. And if we could get that, that's from the business standpoint. From the fans' point of view, I just think about what that would do to college football. I think about the fact that if I'm a fan, finally I'd have structure in the sport. I'd have rules that are agreed upon that can be enforced because all of a sudden you have the power to enforce them and you're not getting taken to court every 5 minutes. Also, overhauling the Sports Broadcasting Act and having a college football TV deal makes our sport feel a lot more like the NFL. I don't want college football to be the NFL. I mean, from a TV perspective, if you're a Tennessee fan, you may open the season on ABC at 3:30 and you get one broadcast crew. Then you're on Fox at noon when you play South Carolina the next week and you get another broadcast crew. Then you're in primetime the week after that on NBC. Primetime the week after that on CBS. Then you get an ESPN game. And so all the broadcast crews cover the sport nationally, just like the NFL. More importantly, all of the networks cover college football. Instead of Fox just covers the Big Ten, ABC, ESPN mainly covers the SEC and mainly promotes that conference that you're in bed with. And everybody has got a responsibility to promote the sport, to cover the sport, and to promote the college football playoff instead of right now where it's just solely promoted and marketed by ESPN because they own the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I just think from a viewership and a fan's perspective, that would be a lot more fun. Then from the players and the coaches and the administrator side, the money would be a lot more fun.
Yeah.
That's what I try and do on day one. Day two, I don't know. I have no idea what day two would be.
What's the best game that you've ever experienced live?
I think that 2017 title game, the Tua walk-off game, that was pretty crazy because it's a walk-off in a national title game.
Yeah.
I think that Tennessee upset of Bama in 2022, yeah. I think that's the most memorable game I've ever been a part of. I'm trying to think. Texas OU, I was at the one where Texas got up big, and then Caleb Williams comes in and leads OU from behind, and that was my first Cotton Bowl, too. My first experience at the Cotton Bowl, at the Red River Shootout, so that was a memorable one. Ohio State, Oregon a couple of years ago, that's way up there. That could be regular season number one, actually. Ohio State, Oregon a couple of years ago, because it's also the first time Ohio State had been out there and they took a lot of their fans out there and they got to experience a place that has half the capacity that they do and yet it's louder than their place and they were kind of surprised by that. That's a short list. If you gave me like a day, I'd probably come up with 20 of them.
Yeah.
That'll be tied for one.
Well, I just think they've done a lot of places have done a really good job trying to up the game day because they know it's so easy to stay at home and watch the games. And
I think Georgia's done that in the SEC better than anyone. If you went to a Georgia game in 2015, you went to a Georgia game in 2025, it doesn't even feel like the same building. And there's been minor construction there, but they haven't expanded that place at all. It's sort of congruent to what's happened with the football program. Back under Mark Richt, they were playing at a high level, but it was not an elite level. And then Kirby came in and just forced it through sheer will to up itself. Well, I think he also challenged the fan base, the donor base, to up its game as well. You got 90,000+ seats in here, and yet it's not really that big a problem on third down for the opponent, and it should be. If you're demanding excellence from us, you ought to give it to us. And, you know, he's got the equity to be able to talk that way, and it worked. Because I was over there for the Texas and Bama games last year, and that place is off the charts. And they've done a really great job from a game day production standpoint, too, of not just sitting back and counting on the concrete and the steel and the metal to do the job for you. Like, you go around to these places, and it's a full-on just theatrical production almost. And older school people look at that, and they don't like it. And that's fine. But you got to understand, like you said, it's really easy to stay home now. So if you're going to get folks to drive, spend their entire day, really, at the stadium, you got to give them a return. And, you know, the thing we're still lagging far behind on is when you're at a game live, not knowing what's going on elsewhere in the country, so it's really hit and miss whether they keep you updated with the in-stadium scoreboards. And, you know, you may or may not have Wi-Fi on the field or in the stadium. But, yeah, I think Georgia's done a great job on that front.
Yeah, I remember that Florida-Miami game. You were going down the tunnel and, I guess, working in the basement there to get some work done.
can two things be true at the same time? Oklahoma and Texas coming to the SEC is probably bad for the sport because it kicked off all this stuff.
Yep.
But I think it's been amazing for the SEC, and particularly just getting these two great fan bases in here. Like, Oklahoma fans, they love me. Texas fans, they hate me. Little yin and the yang. Texas fans love Shane. Oklahoma, I think they're still lukewarm on him. But can both those things be true at the same time?
Yeah, I think they are. I think last year, the week of that Texas-Georgia game, I remember saying that. I remember saying, can you believe this is just a regular season game? And then at the same time, I know my opinion overall is that's been a net negative for the sport to have both of them leave the Big 12 and come to the SEC. Yet I'm not complaining. When I'm watching Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, Texas goes to Tennessee this year. Yeah. That's just insane to think about that visual. Because it used to be, if that happened, that was a once in 30 year out of conference game. And now it's just something that's going to happen once every 4 years in any venue with the expansion to 9 conference games. Yeah, I agree with you. That's why it's always shades of gray when it comes to conference realignment or expansion or the playoff expanding.
Right.
Like, I hate the 24 team idea when it comes to playoff expansion. But of course, the day of the playoff game, I'm clearing my schedule. I may even be at the game. Like, I'm locked in. But don't take my viewership as this tacit endorsement that you made a great decision, and it's just this black and white, right or wrong, yes or no. It's a lot of shades of gray to that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and so obviously you think, just like everybody else, the playoff will expand?
Well, I'm hoping not to 24. Well, first off, I'm hoping it sits still because 12 is fine with me. But if it does expand, I'm hoping they don't go past 16. But, you know, when you have not the kind of decision makers, because that makes them sound like bad people. When the decision makers have the goals they have at the forefront of their decision making, they're way more motivated to explore a 2014 playoff than someone like me who cares about the regular season first and foremost. And that was always the risk. That's always why I hate when people bang the drum of revenue and bang the drum of ratings and stuff like that. If you're a TV executive, that makes sense. Why in the world do fans care about ratings and revenue? You don't make a dime of that money. In fact, it is your money that you're spending so that other people can make it. So why do you care about revenue? And why do you care about this proposal that if it goes through, the main accomplishment of that proposal is to increase revenue? Did it better your viewing experience? And I would say expansion of the playoff any further is a net negative on the viewing experience if you're like me, if you love the regular season first and foremost. Now, if you don't care about the regular season as much and you look at college football the same way you do the NBA or the same way you do college basketball, then I guess you're all for expanding it as far as they can expand it, because it becomes just the playoff is your season at that point. I've just never felt that way about college football.
Mm-hmm. All right, last thing for you, Josh. Really appreciate your time, but Big Ten versus SEC. I guess I'm on an island over here. I still don't think the Big Ten is better than the SEC. I will admit, Indiana was the best. I think the year before, Ohio State was the best. I guess we have to say Michigan, even though we know they were cheating their ass off, was the best that year. But I'm not saying the best team. I'm saying the best conference. Because, I mean, outside of three or four teams in the Big Ten, I don't think there's much quality there. I mean, hell, what did Ohio State win last year? I heard all year that was the most dominant team. That was the best team. They gave Indiana a run, I guess, was their best appearance. Meanwhile, in the SEC, you know, they're, I think I think NIL and the transfer portal have really hurt Georgia and Bama in terms of where they were and where they are today, but they're still up there. I still think the SEC is better overall conference than the Big Ten. Am I crazy? And does the SEC need to win a championship next year to kind of prove that?
Well, I think I agree with you. I think the depth of the SEC is still better than the depth of the Big Ten. Maybe it's like a wider, flatter iceberg, and maybe the Big Ten's iceberg has a little sharper point at the top of it. But also, it really depends on how you define it. Because a lot of people define which is the best conference by, can you win a national title? Well, if that's your definition, the Big Ten's been definitively the better conference. When we were doing Get Up last year, the day after the Fiesta Bowl, where Ole Miss got eliminated. So Mike Greenberg asked me, now that Ole Miss has been eliminated, it ensures that the SEC is not going to be in the national title game for the third year in a row?
Yeah.
He said, does that prove that the Big Ten is better than the SEC? And my answer was, I don't feel any different about the answer to that question today if Ole Miss had won. Ole Miss could be in the national title game. It doesn't really change my perspective because no one game changes my perspective on that. So let's say Texas makes a run this year and they win the national title and the next best team in the conference is 8-4. To me, the SEC took a step back, even though one of their member institutions won the national title. So that doesn't fit in a tweet. That doesn't fit on a graphic. Therefore, it really does not compute with what people are looking for when they talk about that stuff. So here's the bottom line. There's more really good in the SEC. There is more great in the Big Ten right now. And that's where your Nebraskas, your Michigan States, your Wisconsins, your Iowas, your Illinois, those are the ones that if a group of two or three of them at any given point really take that next step, that's where the Big Ten swings the sledgehammer. Because I know to a certain extent Ohio State, Oregon are going to be there every year. I know that Michigan I'm going to be able to largely depend on. Penn State has been that for a little while. We'll see if they continue to be that. USC is a total wild card in that equation because they should be, but they haven't been. But that next tier, that tier two, should be like half a dozen teams deep in the Big Ten. And it really hasn't been. And that's, to me, the separator right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, Josh. Really appreciate it. It was an honor. And, you know, I just hope you don't run into any people at the grocery store that don't return their carts in the near future as payment for doing this.
Disgusting, disgusting people. They're going to be out there whether I do the show or not. Let's just be real. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, brother.